because sometimes I get a little bit hard of hearing.
I'll just say for the
recorder, for the microphone, that we're here at Oberlin College. It's
October 13th, 1:35 p.m. or so, and we're joined in our classroom at Gypsy's Travelers by Mr. Steve Biscor. Teddy and Emily, perhaps you could introduce yourselves briefly as a student contact for this interview.
Yeah, I'm Emily Peterson. I'm a junior at Oberlin College.
I'm Teddy Mench. I am a senior at Oberlin College.
Mr. Biscor, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind introducing yourself and just telling us a little bit about
yourself? My name is Steve Biscor, and I am the author of the book Gypsy Violins, Hungarian Slovak Gypsies in America.
And we're just going to ask some questions, starting off about your early life, and then there'll be plenty of time to talk with you about some of the things that you mentioned wanting to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right.
So my name is Elia Zuckerman, and I would love to know what kind of role music played in your childhood.
What
kind of role did
music
play in your childhood?
And in my house, we had music on just about every day. And I say my father was a musician, and everybody in my family was a musician. My brother was a musician, so I was constantly practicing and playing, listening to music. On a Sunday was like a day for, it was the same day for every gypsy and that was in Cleveland or from this group of people, even in Chicago and Detroit. And Sunday mornings, you would get up in the morning, your mother would be cooking stuffed cabbage and chicken and potato salad and chicken soup, and your father would be, the Hungarian radio program would be on, and he'd be listening to the Hungarian gypsy music and then start practicing. And then at some point during the morning, they went to church. Not everybody was not everybody went to church, but a good portion of them did. And I mean, that was basically the Sunday for everybody that's in this book. And everybody did the same thing. It was a tradition that went back to I don't know how long.
I was wondering, what was it? Could you talk a little bit about your parents and their experiences growing up and how that may have informed your childhood? Like, were they always in the Midwest? Just like some, like where your parents are from, that kind of thing?
Yeah, my mother was born in Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, her mother was born in Cleveland, Ohio, too. My father was born in Pittsburgh, but His mother was actually born in Cleveland. But my father and mother met in a small town in outside of Pittsburgh. If you know where Kennywood Park is at in Pittsburgh, it's right across the river from Kennywood Park, a small town called Braddock, Pennsylvania. And at that time, Braddock, Pennsylvania had the largest settlement of Hungarian Slovak Gypsies in the country, in the United States. And history books reflect that too, that they, what they did was in the early days, they actually bought all the houses, and it was sort of formed in like a square, which they referred to it as the yard, because in the middle there was a big yard for all the kids to play in. But I mean, they met there, and eventually, my mother didn't like staying in Pittsburgh because all her family was in Cleveland, and she didn't like my father working in the steel mills, so she moved back to Cleveland, and he started playing music with one of my mother's relatives, but they weren't playing gypsy music, they were playing Latin music. So he played Latin music for about 30 years with this Latin band. They became a really famous band in Cleveland, and after that he went back to playing gypsy music and played with the Hungarian band here in Cleveland, and he passed away in 1986. But my mother and father, I mean, they weren't anything different from out of the ordinary. I mean, my father was strict, and you know, you had to go to school, and you. He wasn't strict on us being musicians. I mean, he pushed us to be musicians. I mean, I went for lessons playing guitar when I was only about 10 years old. That's usually around the age they start them, and my brother was starting earlier than that. He actually had a band here in the Cleveland area for actually this area too, and they played for a good 30 years, and they did. They finally got into like the Holiday Inns and there was the Brown Derbies back then, and it was a big circuit where it was just spread all over, and they got into that circuit, and they would travel all over to all the different Brown Derbies to play, and which for them at that time it was really good because they were getting good money compared to just playing in a local bar. I mean, they were playing in one of the biggest places that was out at that time for people to go to. But yeah, my mother and father was nothing different. My mother, they had a relationship that was kind of strange with working. My mother would go to work in the morning around 6 o'clock in the morning. And she worked in a hospital. And she would get back at home before we got out of school. So by about 2 o'clock, she was done working and she was home. My father went to play at about 6 o'clock in the evening, and he played till 2 o'clock in the morning. So he got us up for school, and that's probably why he pushed us to go to school, because he didn't want us home. But he sent us to school, and they kind of worked it out that way, and it worked good for them, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, there was, I don't know of anything different. I mean, I grew up in a projects on West 25th Street. And at that time when I grew up, it was really mixed. I mean, it eventually became all black, I mean, but it wasn't just black when it first opened up. It was really mixed. It was, every race was in there. And it was a big projects, you know, and there was 100 of us kids playing in this big open field, you know, for that. Went all the way from Bridge Avenue all the way to Franklin Avenue. So we got to know all the people that were there. I mean, we grew up with them, went to school with them. And I say they weren't much different from us either.
Are you still in touch with friends from childhood?
Oh yeah, from that era, yeah. I mean, we became really close friends. And that because we really grew up together. We went to school together, went to the same schools. You know, we played together. We were just always together. My brother's band actually was made up from that group of people, and they stood together for 30 years.
Wow.
Continuing on the vein of family origins, how far back have you been able to trace your ancestors, and how did you acquire that knowledge?
I started back when there wasn't any computers, you know, so the census was out, and the way you had to search the census was hard. I mean, you had to go look through directories to find the address of where they lived at, and then you looked the address up in the census, or you did it by the sound deck system, which both of them weren't easy. So I say back then when I was looking for them, I found only them here in Cleveland. So I knew when my grandfather and the grandmothers came to Cleveland, came from Europe rather, and I knew where they lived. I knew the history of them here, but I didn't know the history of them back in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then as time went by, I was like one of the very first ones on the computer for
Ancestry?
No, where the ships come through in New York.
Ellis Island.
I was one of the very first ones on it, on a computer. I mean, I was one of the first ones that signed up for it. But when I went on it, it was a nightmare. I mean, they didn't have nothing set right. I mean, you couldn't find anything on it. So they asked my opinion on it, and I said, no, it's worthless. I said, because, you know, I'm looking on here, and I can't find anything. So, but now that's, you put your name in there, and it automatically pops up, and you find it. But I found my great-grandmother's baptism paper, and she was baptized in 1865. Some of it went, some went a little bit back further than that to early 1800s, all to all from Slovakia, and in that area of Slovakia, Budapest. At that time, it was Austria-Hungary, which it was all like one country. So, and the borders changed from we came from, it was called Gusha. Hungary back then, and today it's called Kosice Slovakia. So that's why the Hungarian Slovak gypsies came about. We were actually Hungary and Slovakia at the same time.
So pick up, and I know you've also been doing genealogical research more recently, and you brought in a couple of documents.
I did it, it was easy for me to do because I say you had to look for addresses. So these gypsies, when they came to America, they all moved in the same neighborhoods. I mean, they moved next door to each other, and they lived like that for almost 100 years, where they just lived next door to each other, and they wouldn't move away from each other. They, it's the way they lived. They were afraid, you know. They were still remembered Europe, you know. So they lived like that for a long time, so I knew everywhere they lived at. I knew in Cleveland where they lived at, and Youngstown I knew where they lived at, and Pittsburgh and Chicago, Detroit, because they only lived in them areas that where they were at. So it was easy for me to do the research for here in America, because I just went street by street and I found everybody. You know, so when I did the research, I did it on 100 people instead of just my family. I did it on everybody, because I said everybody lived next door to each other. And that way it was easy, but going further back into Europe, it gets a little more complicated because you got more grandparents. So now you don't have four, you got 8 and 16 and 32 and 64. And I got something on my Facebook site that it says, it shows you all the grandparents chart, and it goes all the way down to, I don't know, 500 and some. And then it says at the bottom, it says back in the year, I forget how far it goes back. It says back in the years, there was only so many people, and it was double the amount of grandparents you had. So it says you're actually related to everybody twice. and the genealogists say that everybody is one at least 100 first cousin, 100 cousin, which I believe is true too, because it can't be any other way.
And the projects that you lived in was very diverse racially and culturally. I assume, when did you start picking up on those differences, and like, and what were the type of cultural differences that you noticed?
Like as far as how we were to compared to other people?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were different. I mean, the musicians were well sought after because they played music from all types of the ethnic music. Naturally, Hungarian music was their number one, but Slovak music, they played Croatian music, Polish music, I mean, all the ethnic groups that came from Europe during that industrial revolution in around 1890, when things just went crazy and everybody was moving here. And so Their interaction with them people, they knew them, they knew each other. But as far as intermarriages and stuff like that, there was very few. Now there's very few marriages that are Roma together, you know. Now just about everybody's married out of the culture, and that's why the culture is being lost. But back then, yeah, they married strictly into each other, and it was back in the older days. I mean, there was put together marriages, but I mean, that didn't work when like a generation before me would have been 10 years older than me. It didn't work for them when they were growing up because they wouldn't go, they didn't stand for that. You know, they wanted who they picked out and wouldn't let anybody pick for them. But yeah, the grandparents, I mean, in their days, I mean, a lot of marriages were fixed marriages put together. And a lot of them were related somehow. It's another, not first, second cousins, but they were somehow related, maybe, you know. Because, I mean, it was a small group of people, and you can't keep the intermarriage going without being related to each other. So, I mean, they didn't go first cousin, second cousin, or even third cousin, but, I mean, they were related somehow. All of us in this book, I mean, I'll give an example. I went to a wedding in Chicago, and there was about 500 people in this hall. I mean, everybody was having a great time. They were playing music. The band was playing. And I was standing with one of my cousins, and I said, "Do you know everybody in this hall?" And they said, "You know, actually, I don't know anybody." And I said, "Well, you know what? I don't know anybody either." I said, "I probably know the older ones, maybe about 20 or 30 of them. But anybody after that, I mean, I didn't know any of them. But if I went to any of them and asked them, like, who their father was or who their grandparents were, I mean, I would know what family they came from and how they were related, and then the whole bit, what town they came from." And so, I mean, but today it's different. The young kids don't even want it. They don't even want to keep the language. They don't want nothing to do with it. And it's, my mouth's totally lost. Like the band that's coming now on the 30th, the four of them that are coming are the last four musicians, older musicians. There's a couple younger musicians that are playing violin, but they don't, if you don't have a band to play with, you're not going to play the music right. You know, so you have to have an orchestra to play with it, and they don't have an orchestra to play with it, so it's not going to go anywhere, because the guys that are coming on the 30th, the guitar player is 86 years old. The bass player is his son. He's probably closer to my age. The violin player is a little bit younger than me, not much. And the cymbalum player is about 10 years older than me. So, I mean, they're getting up in their age where, I mean, eventually, that's the last four, and eventually that's going to stop too. I mean, what if one of them, something happens to one of them, they get sick or something, I mean, it's gone, completely gone.
Why do you think that the younger generation isn't interested in that tradition?
It's through intermarriage and I mean, today's culture, I mean, even it's a lot of races that are it's happening to. I just came back from Europe. I was in Europe for 32 days the first time. Then like a month later, I went back for another 20 days and went through 28 countries of Europe. I talked to people there from my people and more in Budapest, because when I got to Budapest, there was people there that I knew. You know, I had friends in Budapest. When I got to Budapest, I asked them questions about, and we were asking each other questions about, well, how's it in America? How's it in Budapest? And we wound up finding out that America was just about the same as Budapest. I mean, they're doing the same thing. They're losing the heritage. They're intermarrying. They're marrying out of the heritage. And it's just happening. It's the way of life. I mean, the young kids today don't care about it. I mean, and it's a lot of young kids. I mean, it's the whole generation of kids, not just one group of kids. I mean, the whole entire generation of kids is that way. I mean, it changed so much that the music changed completely. I mean, today it used to be called rap. It's called hip hop now, and hip hop music, I mean, took over the industry for just about everything. I mean, when it first came out, everybody said it wouldn't last a year, and that was, you know, 35 years ago. So, I mean, that's how everything changes. I mean, it just happens. And I say the younger ones, that's what they did. They went with the flow of the people. But what's good about it is a lot of them, I mean, they're continuing their education. Most of them are graduating high school, going to college. they're doing something with their lives at least. You know, we've got a couple of doctors in the community where we didn't have people that finished high school. You know, it was rare for somebody to finish high school back 100 years ago, but today we've got doctors, we've got lawyers, we've got politicians, we've got people working in high places, CEOs. I mean, a lot of them don't go by saying that they're gypsy. They'll say that they're either Slovak or Hungarian. They don't go by gypsy, you know, but they are, I know who they are. I mean, I've met them, they're from our family. And I mean, it's good that they do that. I mean, it's, you know, at least if you're gonna lose the heritage, at least you're doing something with what you're losing. So I mean, today the kids are at least doing that. I mean, they have their problems. You know, same thing as the people are going through with young kids today with drugs and stuff like that. I mean, it's everywhere. So I mean, they try to stop it. I mean, there's not much you can do about it. But one thing they learned is that As when I was growing up, it was easy for, when you had a party, I mean, it was easy to sit down, and I did it all my life because I was fascinated with my people because they were so different. You know, I mean, they can sit around a table like this and have a party and pull out instruments, start playing and having a good time, but they're drinking at the same time, you know, which now they realize that stuff when they were drinking in front of the kids, that was wrong. So now they don't do that anymore. So they're learning, you know.
Do you have any kids of your own?
Pardon?
Do you have any children of your own?
No. I never married. I was too busy doing everything else. But I got 35 nieces and nephews that keep me going. I mean, I was in Europe and everybody wanted a gift.
Outside pressure telling you to follow a certain path, and do you feel like that outside pressure has changed for the younger generation?
Yeah, I mean, when I went to school, I mean, I was determined to graduate high school, at least graduate high school, and I did. And I could have went to college. I even refused a scholarship because when I finished high school, I said, I'm done with school. I don't want to go back to school no more. You know? So I actually, as soon as I got out of school, I went to work. And I was still fooling with music playing, but I was, I mean, the people that were my age that were playing music, I mean, I was making more money than they were making playing music. I was making more money than working, you know, so I said, I couldn't see why, you know, why would you go to play and make far less money than I'm making and I'm getting benefits too, and then they're not getting anything. So, I mean, I couldn't balance that out in my head, you know. I said it was all right to do it as a side thing, maybe just play on the weekends, but not as a full time, but these guys did it full time. I mean, they didn't do anything else. They played music and that's all they did. Some of the older ones went to work. Like I say, my father worked a full-time job. He held a full-time job down in a daytime, and then in the nighttime he went to play. And I mean, he'd get 5-6 hours of sleep. But this was when my mother was pregnant, or she had little kids like us. I mean, she didn't work, so she was a stay-home mom. So by the time we got to school, then she was okay for her to go back to work because we were in school all day. So. And I say it was. I mean, there wasn't really any kind of pressure from anybody to do anything. Some people, like I say, some people still don't. Well, back in the days, I mean, they expected the men to be a musician. You know, it was really expected. If you weren't a musician, I mean, they didn't even want to associate with you as far as music-wise or doing anything that-wise. I mean, And that's the way they were. I mean, they were strict about it. They would want strict musicians. And but I say that changed a lot. Today, like I say, these four that are coming on the 30th are the last four musicians. The cymbalum player that's coming, he's the last cymbalum player there are. There's no other cymbalum player. And I say he's in his early 70s now. And I say when he dies, I mean, that's over with. The cymbalum is over with. Nobody else is playing it. Now, going back in the days of my grandfathers, my two grandfathers and my grandmother were all cymbalum players. And they all played for a living out of it. I mean, there was so many of them, there was at least two or three in each family. And just, we're only going maybe 70, 80 years ago, and now it's completely gone. You know, so in that short time, you know, everything fell apart.
Between you and your siblings, are there different, like, trajectories based on, like, how close they stayed to the culture and how, like, traditional they are between you and your siblings, or are you all...
You gotta say it again?
Between you and your siblings, are some of them more traditional and
well,
some
I mean,
of them not?
No, actually, I'm more, I mean, my brothers and sisters tell me that, you know, that I'm too stuck into this over here, you know, that, and I've been that way all my life. I mean, I was only 15, 16 years old and going in bars to listen to them play. Now, they wouldn't let me drink in a bar, but the owners wouldn't even let me in, but, you know, my uncle or somebody was playing in a band, and they told the owner, no, don't worry, he's okay, just let him sit over here, and I'd go sit next to them by the stage, you know, and order a pop or something, you know, and sit there for a couple hours. But I did it just to get that experience of seeing it, you know. And I did that all my life up until today. I still do it. I mean, if somebody's playing, I still go and see it. But my brother, the musician, I mean, he never played gypsy music. He played popular music. I mean, back then, they were playing music. Back then, this was in the 60s, and they were playing popular music of that era, you know, and they continued it through all the way until the 90s, 2000s, when he stopped playing music. But yeah, he never played gypsy music. My two other brothers, my one brother is, he's working now. He's got maybe a year to retire. I mean, and that's what he did all his life. My older brother did the same thing. Then he went to school for electrician stuff, and that's what he became, and he retired too. So, I mean, there was really no, I mean, in the family there was. I mean, my father was strictly this with gypsy music, and my mother was too. I mean, you couldn't put them into anything else. I mean, my father played Latin music all his life, but I mean, this was really his life, the gypsy music. He'd come home and listen to gypsy music, not Latin music. You know, but yeah, through the brothers and sisters, I mean, to me, that's when things started breaking away, you know. It was in my era, actually it was an era before me. There were maybe 10 years older than me, and they're the ones that actually started it. They're the ones that started marrying out of the waste. They're the ones that started, stopped listening to this music and going to what I call American music more. It's just popular music. And they're the ones that started it, and it just trickled down and it kept going and never stopped. I tried to stop it in the 70s and I couldn't do it. I'd say back then I knew it was happening, couldn't stop it.
What do you think is, like, given, like, the fact that it seems like music, or gypsy music specifically, had, like, a really important part of your life and your family's life, what do you think is being lost in terms of...
It's all of it. I mean, today the young kids don't know anything about their heritage, their culture. They don't know the language. I mean, if I speak to them in gypsy, they have no clue what I'm saying. If I ask them, you know, I'll ask them, you know, where did your grandfather come from, you know, and they'll say Chicago or something like that. And I say, no, he didn't come from Chicago. He came from Slovakia. You know, I mean, they just don't care as they're feeling on it, you know. And they don't, like I say, they totally, I mean, totally lost it. They're more, you would have had to been, let's say, I think around the early 1980s was the last big event, which was a funeral where there was a lot of men that played. It was on, our funeral was always on TV. It was always big events, but that was the last one. The media was all there, and this was in Detroit, and a lot of people were there. A lot of musicians were playing. And that was the last one that happened to. Since then, there's been no media coverage. There's been no musicians. There's been, and that's because nobody's playing anymore. There's still musicians now, but they're playing jazz music. They're not playing gypsy music. I mean, they're all very talented musicians. A gypsy's never going to lose his talent to play. That's one thing that's not going to be lost. I mean, they have the talent to play. I mean, I have relatives that have made it. I mean, they're famous in the jazz music. I mean, I don't know if you know jazz or you know who they were, but I have them listed in a book. I have one that made it as the number one Elvis Presley impersonator in the country. He actually won the contest for it, and Lisa Marie and Priscilla Presley proclaimed him Elvis Presley, and he was just there, just with them in Graceland just about a month ago, and he performs in Vegas, and he goes all over the world performing as Elvis Presley, and I'm first cousins with his mother, and I said, you know, where did that come from? Why Elvis Presley? I mean, how did that come about? I mean. And, he actually looks like Elvis Presley, but he's identical to him. If you put the pictures together, you can't tell them apart. I'll give you his name, and you can look at his stuff on YouTube, all his stuff that he's got. He's got hundreds of them on there. He's got thousands and thousands of fans.
Do you wish that the ways in which non-gypsy people in Cleveland consume your culture was any different or changed at all?
Like I say, the intermarriages were, I say my both of, well, my brother and my sister both married out of the race. So all of his kids, his wife passed away about 20 years ago. So all of the kids, you know, they'll tell you that they're half. They'll say they're half gypsy and half, I don't even know what the other side is. And so, but they tend more to be, and I'm wrong for saying it, but I call it more Americanized, you know, because if you say Americanized, it's like everybody, what everybody's doing is everybody's doing the same thing, you know, instead of like, even like we grew up with a big in a neighborhood where there was a big group of Spanish people, Puerto Ricans, and today, I mean, we still know them, and we had in common was Spanish people too, our great musicians too, and all of them play. So I mean, we got together good because everybody knew that we were all good musicians and played together, and you know, everybody respected each other for doing it. There was even a few marriages in between the two groups of people, but most of the intermarriages went towards the other side, not towards the gypsy side. Mm-hmm. And like I say, why that happened, I don't know. Maybe it's just because they of the intermarriage of not the partner that wasn't the gypsy wasn't coming around by the gypsies, you know. That resulted in the kids doing the same thing. So, I mean, it really did happen that way. I mean, it took a long time for it to happen, but by early 1970s, I knew it was happening. I mean, I told them it was happening, and they just wouldn't listen.
So there's no sort of like guilty sentiment towards it, like an allowance for the culture to be let go. I don't know, sometimes, actually, it's terrible. Like, there's no, like, your brothers and sisters, do they ever feel any sort of like regret in not passing on more traditions to their children?
What do you mean, pass?
I don't. Like,
well, no, I mean, they didn't. Yeah, I mean,
culture.
They. All of them didn't. All of them that intermarried didn't force one or the other on the kids, you know. They didn't say, well, no, I'm married to Irish girl, so, you know, but you still have to be gypsy. You can't be Irish. You know, even though you're half Irish, you can't be gypsy. They didn't do that. You know, they didn't push each other on each other, you know, and the Irish didn't say, well, you can't be gypsy anymore either, you know, but you know, I don't know if that was good or I don't know if that was bad, you know, I mean, there was obviously a talent on the gypsy side that was just an unbelievable talent. I mean, I've got videos, and you'll have to go on my, I've got some on my YouTube page, but there's more of some of our little kids that are 5 years old and playing drums like a 40-year-old would play, and you know, piano players and violin players. I mean, they became symphony players. I mean, the talent was there. The talent is still there. I keep telling them, you know, put an instrument, and at least keep an instrument in your house, you know. So if this kid one day might just pick up the instrument and start playing, I mean, if you don't give it to him, you ain't gonna know, you know. And a lot of the kids are. I mean, a lot of the kids that are in a marriage, they still have the talent. They are, I said, they're jazz musicians. A lot of them are in Las Vegas, and they're actually doing good. I said, I've got a cousin that he actually made it in the jazz world. They just did a big tribute to Michael Becker, and all the big jazz people were there playing. He was on it playing. He played with Miles Davis. He played with, so many of them, I can't think of their names. But his really fame came with playing with Miles Davis, because I mean, Miles Davis was the ultimate in the jazz. I mean, his name is synonymous. You say Miles Davis, everybody says jazz. So, I mean, when he played with Miles Davis, I mean, that really put him right to the top. And then after that, everybody wanted him. But, yeah, I mean, he's right now he lives in Paris, too. He's a lot more famous in Europe than he is here in America. But a lot of them, the kids still have the talent. I mean, they can do it, but there's it's just not being pushed anymore. There's a lot of them that are not playing, and you know, there's not much you can do if the parents don't want to do it. Somebody else can't come along and say, go ahead and do it. I actually had a really good chance, because when all this stuff happened, I never expected this book to go anywhere. I mean, I wrote the book basically for my family, so that they can see it. Then, no, I didn't think this book was going to be for sale for anybody. I mean, the first one that did a review on it was the Pittsburgh Post Gazette, because they knew I was, they helped me with pictures and stuff, so they knew I was writing a book, and they actually wanted a copy of the book when it was done. And then things just started happening where it just started going to places that, you know, I had no idea that it was going to happen that way. I mean, you can see by that I'm not a writer, by the book. I mean, so I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. Putting the book together, I had absolutely no idea how to put the book together. I didn't have any help whatsoever of doing it, and that's all I said is, no, I really don't care. I said, I'm just putting it together, I'm doing it, and however it comes out, that's what I'm gonna do, you know. So I had people proofreading it for me, and You know, every time I, after they proofread it, every time I'd go back and proofread it, I'd still find a mistake. Or, and, you know, somebody would say, well, that's a, you know, wrong sentence to use or something, and I'd say, well, correct it, you know. And after, I kept on going so long, I just said, you know, do you understand what I'm saying in the book? They said, yeah. I said, good enough.
We have time for a couple more questions. A few minutes left. Maybe anyone who hasn't got a chance to ask a question yet, this is a good moment to.
I was wondering, my name is Patrick. I am here studying classical viola, and I come from a Moravian family with like a very strong tradition of music in my background and my growing up. We've had Cleveland Orchestra members, we've had like college professors and stuff. But there
what was the race?
Moravian, from Moravia. And but I noticed I'm the only musician in my family from probably the past 100 years. Because there was like a sort of a shift in my like ancestry where like music was no longer looked upon positively as like a career choice, so they started going other ways. And you mentioned how like it used to be like musicians, like they wouldn't talk to you if they weren't a musician. Like
yeah, well, I mean they weren't exactly that stuck up. I mean they wanted you to be a musician and only a musician, and that was it. I mean that's what they wanted. I mean. The musicians and this group of people go back, I mean, we already know that it's several hundred years. It goes back, I mean, my great-grandfather was talking about his grandfather being a musician back in Europe. I mean, so you're talking about six generations. I mean, that could easily go back into the 1500s, you know. And so we know it goes back several hundred years of musicians and the the stuff that history tells you about, like the great composers, Mozart and all these guys, Beethoven, they all went among the gypsies out of it to actually study their methods. I mean, gypsies actually couldn't teach them how to play because, I mean, obviously it's Mozart and Beethoven, but they got the idea of how to make their Hungarian dances and stuff like that. They got it from the gypsies out of it. And when they talk about it, of who they went by, they actually mention names out of it. You know, we went by this one. Now, we know who that is that they went by. And when we look up that person that they went by, and this is back in, I don't know when Mozart and Beethoven actually dates were where they were at, but we look back in that person, and it shows that that person's band members were, the last names were Balog and Horvat and everything, and that's all the names in this book. So, you know, it's we know that it goes far back. We, they were the ones that brought this gypsy music here to America. Before that, it was only groups that were coming from Europe periodically playing here once in a great while, but they're the ones that actually brought the music here. They brought the Hungarian gypsy music with them.
Does knowing that give you hope? Does knowing this history give you hope for the current situation? As you mentioned, that it's sort of falling out of favor with the current generation, but maybe in some way this sort of storyline is just too ingrained to disappear?
Like I say, it became such a hard situation with these group is. I'm on Facebook with everybody, and I put out a question to them, and I said, you know, tell me where your grandfather was from, where your great grandfather was from. Now, so about five or six of them come email me, respond back, and they say, my grandfather was from Austria. So I'm just letting them go. I'm letting them talk, and then I finally confronted them, and I said, I mean, do you have any idea back then what Austria was back then? And they obviously don't have any idea. I said, well, Austria, it was not Austria, it was actually Austria-Hungary. It was the Austria-Hungarian Empire, which comprised of all of them countries through there, which included Hungary and Slovakia. It was all under Franz Joseph. My grandfather says Austria on it too, but he didn't come from Austria, he came from Slovakia. You know, so they can't comprehend that for some reason. They think that it actually came from Austria. And I said, you know, I was just in Austria when I went to Slovakia, and I was in Vienna, and we hired a private tour guide in Vienna, and he told us, he said, no, the language in Vienna and Austria was, they claim it's German. He said, it's not German. He said, Vienna, Austria will tell you it's not German language, that is different than Germany, but yet they can understand each other. So he said it's a little bit German and Dutch related more, you know, but yeah, no, these people would not have been in Austria, no.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This was really wonderful. We'd love to have you back and hear more about your family and your work. I know you've been involved in some political efforts and hear about your travels. So, but thank you, and please join me in applause.
Thank you.